The reality is, if you went and did your land, how are you going to control the build outcome?
Gallery Homes is the fifth largest private residential builder here in Southeast Queensland.
By working with me, I can guarantee you what your house is going to look like. I can guarantee what the inclusions are, what the size is going to be. Like, I can guarantee you what the built outcome of your land estate will look like, because...
But you're upfront about it, going, if it's late, it's on us, we'll cover it so you're not getting screwed.
Yeah.
Not only are we upfront about it, we actually promote it. In our contract, we guarantee we start within 28 days. And if we don't, we pay LDs or late damages, which is $60 a day.
What do you believe are the real drivers behind the current housing crisis in Australia?
Well, it's...
If you are buying a house land package, what should mum and dad be looking for?
So I think you've got to have...
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Unemployable podcast. Usually at Unemployable, we have a calendar of guests that are pre-booked in. This isn't one of them. This one is someone very special that's doing a lot of big things in the property space. I'm going to introduce her first, and I'm going to introduce how this came about. I just want to say thank you very much, Alexandra Stewart Robertson, for joining us today from Gallery Homes. How are you?
I'm really well, and thank you for having me on board.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Carson, as usual, thank you very much.
No worries. Pleasure to be here.
James, the same. For those of you guys that don't know, James or Carson or myself, we are run Unemployable Media here on the podcast. Carson is a large land developer and has been for quite a few years with Shannon. And James is a developer himself and used to actually develop a fair bit of land in the past as well. Now, Gallery Homes is the fifth largest private residential builder here in Southeast Queensland. They've just cracked over 500 homes and probably going to do around 525 homes a year by this year, by the end of the financial year, which is a lot of homes.
A lot of homes.
That's a lot of homes. And you are the National Business Development Manager, which basically is a very fancy name for the head of sales and acquisition. So anything that you guys actually buy and anything that you guys actually sell. And it's a little bit different because they don't sell to retail. And we'll unpack that in the podcast. But it's interesting because, like I said before, we have a calendar and we have people that are booked in for months in advance. And Carson and Alexandra met at the Sanctuary Cove Boat Show. It's actually the weekend of my birthday every year, so I know exactly when that was.
Oh, you're a Gemini.
I am a Gemini. You got to be careful. There's a couple
so
of.
So am I.
There's a couple
Finally
of.
I don't understand what the issue is.
Right. But they literally met at the boat show in Sanctuary Cove because I said, "How did you guys meet?" And basically, Alexandra invited a bunch of land developers, right, to get shit-faced at the boat show so that way she can rob them of their land, basically, is what's happened. And Carson is one of those because after the boat show, he messaged me and said, or rang me and said, "Hey, I think we have someone that I want to get on the pod. I'm not sure how she's going to go, but after a couple glasses of wine, she was really, really cool. And I think she'd add so much value to the podcast." Now, we were debating whether we were going to bring some champagne or wine today, but we haven't. But you're still here.
I'm still here.
Yeah. So we're going to have a good time. Tell us exactly what you do, right? What does, you know, sales acquisitions for one of the largest home builders in the country? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So part of what I do is actually find the land. We've got an incredibly well-established acquisition team, guys with a huge amount of experience, and they're each responsible for an LGA across Southeast Queensland. So we've got Dane, Matt, and Nick, and they're each responsible for their own locations. And it's and then we've got Connor, who is an incredible data researcher. So what we're trying to do is actually see what's coming and what's being delivered into each of these LGAs and how Gallery can actually go in and master plan, design our homes to go on to these estates and deliver a residential outcome into these LGAs that feeds our sales machine. So the way Gallery works, and it's probably a key point of difference for Gallery, is we are a wholesale builder. difference between a wholesale and a retail builder is we're not in display villages. We don't sell with mum and dads coming direct to us and saying, I want to build a home in Logan Reserve. We work with referral partners, and those referral partners are a really wide group of people. So we've got property advisors, we've got financial planners, but we've also got people who are really passionate about helping people build their homes. And what we were finding is that mums and dads or first home buyers, if you've never built a house before, it can be a really daunting and complicated process. And if you're rocking up to a retail builder, you're representing yourself, and those retail builders, it's a really big process to actually take it through. So by working with a wholesale builder, you're coming through a referral partner that is there really to hold your hand through the purchasing process. And Gallery has a full design, drafting, estimating and siting team. So when we put a house onto a block of land, we fully site it, we fully price it, and then we lock it down with an HIA, full turnkey, full fixed price contract. So for a first home buyer or a second or third home buyer, they know exactly what they're getting and how much it's going to cost and the milestones that Gallery is going to take them through to get them there. And there's security in that whole process. And especially after COVID, yes. When I think, you know, the industry took a massive bash, working with a wholesale builder offers a level of security and strength that I don't think the retail builders can compete with. And that's allowed us to dominate in our space over the last couple of years. And here we are, number five.
And it's a total different model than what people are used to. A lot of people are used to, you know, the Metrocons and these types that have display villages everywhere and display houses, and you go, like you said, walk off the street and you go to them and I want to build a house and I've got a block of land and this type of thing. Now, I want everyone that's listening, anyone that is developing land or wants to be developing land, needs to listen to this, because this is how you've been brought on the podcast. If you are a land developer and you're turning one into two or two into five, or, you know, a block of 10, or what Shannon and Carson are doing, 20 and 30 and 50 and 100 and all these different types of blocks of land all over Southeast Queensland. The traditional way of doing things is you would go and develop this land and then you'd go and find a buyer. And usually what people are doing is they use a real estate agent. So they'll go to their local real estate agent, or they'll use a project marketing company like a Colliers or a CBRE Land Holdings, and they'll go and sell the land. The reason I want you guys to listen up here is this is a little bit different, because the reason why Alexandra is on the podcast today is, like I said before, she met Carson at the boat show here on the Gold Coast. And the reason why is because she wants Carson and Shannon's land, right? And
especially the Gold Coast project.
Especially the Gold Coast project, because it is a very unique piece of land and good quality piece of land, really. But the options that Shannon and Carson have is, okay, well, I've got this block of land. We've got how many on this one particularly?
29 lots.
All right, so 29 lots in a very, very good area. What Carson's been doing is selling a lot of the lots himself, right? So he's... We were just talking about, do you pay for parking or do you actually walk the extra 5 minutes? I'm like you, I'm tight. I walk the extra 5 minutes. Carson's a bit tight. He sells his own stock at times. So that's another way of doing it, right? Rather than going and using another agent, you can sell it yourself. You put an REA ad up and you field the inquiry and sell the land. Well, that's what Alexandra doesn't want Carson to do. And she wants them to do a deal together because they got a great block of land. So really, instead of selling 29, was it 29, sorry?
Yep.
Yeah, 29. Rather than selling 29 individual blocks of land to mom and pa and dealing with 29 different mom and pas and going through that whole process, they can realistically do a deal with Alexandra and sell all 29 to one builder. They do a deal, and that's how this model works. And then all of a sudden, the financial planners on this side and the financial advisors over here that know the borrowing capacities of people and say, hey, you should be buying a property, align themselves with someone like Gallery Group that then design a house on the land that Shannon and Carson have developed, and Shannon and Carson make money, Gallery makes a bit of money, and you've got a buyer that now lives in there either first time home or their forever home or their investment property. Is that basically in a nutshell what that looks like?
So the deal that I want Carson to sign up with, and thankfully I've got the contract in my bag so we can get to it shortly, it doesn't cost him anything.
Yeah.
So this is where he doesn't have to engage a project marketing. He doesn't have to pay a land agent any fees. Yeah. How we work is we would actually master plan the whole estate. So we would actually look at the lots. We would do our research to know who the buyers are, what they need in those homes, whether they're going to be double story, five bedroom, three bathroom homes, what it needs to look like. We then assign a colour scheme and we assign a facade. So we would actually be able to show Carson and Shannon full renders of what the whole estate is going to look like. Benefit of being able to do it that way is that I can actually sell a house to a mum and dad, telling them what their streetscape's going to look like. What is their next door neighbour's house going to look like? I can actually protect the overall value from the actual property, but even that street appeal, which we know is so critical, especially when you're dealing with owner occupiers, of what the estate's going to look like in 5, 10 and 15 years. It also means that you can actually protect the privacy of each of the residents, because I know how the two homes are going to line up against each other. I can understand the impact of their alfresco towards their alfresco, or whether you've got ensuite windows in one house lining up against a kid's bedroom in another house. So we consider all of those things. We master plan it, we package it all up, and then we would take it to our referral partners, knowing that I've got the right property with the right inclusions, I'm delivering the right street escape, and you're creating a legacy project. Now, that doesn't cost Carson anything. I have a full design, full drafting, full marketing team. So we create those renders in-house. We create the packages. We can then take it out. The benefit that I've got is that somebody is wanting to work with us because it is a full turnkey fixed price contract. We have site guarantees in our contract. So we guarantee that we're on site within 28 days of land titles. So again, one of the things that's really key is that if you're dealing with somebody that's building their first or their third home, they're living somewhere. They're either paying a mortgage where they're living or they're renting. And when you're building a house, it can be a huge financial burden because you're paying rent and now a mortgage as well. So by us being able to put in a site guarantee, we're just giving comfort and a surety around how long this whole process is going to take. And then we're really clear on what the construction process is. And then we put LDs for both parts within our contracts.
What's an LD? So when you're mentioning acronyms, let's just break it down for the people that don't
know
what they're, and I'll pull you up on it. Yeah, so that way we can. Yeah. So what's an LD?
Is late damages.
Same.
So in our contract, we guarantee we start within 28 days. And if we don't, we pay LDs or late damages, which is $60 a day. And we've worked that out being what the interest would be that you're being charged on a daily basis for a block of land that you've now got a mortgage on.
Yes.
When we're doing our construction LDs or late damages, they're $120 a day and $600 per week, so that it would potentially cover the interest that you're being charged, or it would cover your rent or, contributions to mum and dad where you might be living while you're building a house.
Which is good, because most builders will try and screw the buyer to the, they'll sneak them in there at the lowest rate possible.
Correct.
Where you're upfront about it, going, if it's late, it's on us, we'll cover it so you're not getting screwed.
Yeah.
Not only are we upfront about it, but we actually promote it. It's
a sales tool. And just so if we go back one step for the developers who are listening to this, and they go, because a mentor of mine years ago, before I first started, said, James, if you can't sell it, don't start. And so if you've got an outlet here, we can offload your land in one parcel or one transaction. That's highly beneficial. But just for the developers out there, can you go back and just explain, let's say this deal was consummated with Carson, you're not actually buying the land from Carson as Gallery Homes. You're doing a put and call, or are you? Just so they can get an understanding of what it looks like for them as to when the developer is going to get paid their clip on the land that they put up.
Maybe break that down and going, what is a put, like what are the few different options this can play out on, and what is a put and call and what's a put and
yeah. So we can do it under an exclusive arrangement, which can just be an agency agreement that we put in place. There's no money transferred, but we actually guarantee that we're going to launch and sell it through. So some of our land vendors that we've got a reputation and we've got a history with, they just bring it to us, and it's almost like a gentleman's agreement, and it's an exclusive arrangement. We can do a call agreement, And some developers prefer that, so that if we, and a call agreement is basically saying that we will agree to sell this to a third party within a certain period of time. And if we don't, the land vendor gets the land back. Or we can do a put and call agreement, which is probably, it really sort of depends on the market and I suppose the appetite of the actual developer. But a put and call agreement means we guarantee we're going to sell it within a certain amount of time to a third party. And if we don't, Gallery themselves will settle on the block of land. So you can completely de-risk the program for a land vendor. And right now we're finding it's a mixed bag with what the developers want to do. It almost depends whether they've got full funding for the project or not. We're finding that if somebody's needing to work, you know, with a bank for project funding, that they would prefer a put and call because there's absolutely no recourse. It is guaranteed that those blocks are sold. I'm either going to on sell it to Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And if I haven't done that by the time the land titles, Gallery themselves will settle on the block of land.
So one other piece there, just for the developers out there putting that cap on to give them absolute security, that obviously if you took the land out altogether, it'd be more safe for them, but a put and call is the next best piece there. When you're putting deals together that might take out 29 lots, are you going to someone like Carson?
I like how I'm getting all of Carson's lot now. I just feel like that's confirmed, right? It feels done.
I'm trying to broker and check and click in the middle.
We charge 2% for the
for the hour and a half. But where I'm going with it, it's just so it's a live sort of deal as such. Is there usually a bulk discount rate that you'll ask from the land developer, or you pay them at market rate? And I guess that depends on market conditions as well.
Look, at the moment, we're even reverse engineering it. We've even got land vendors coming to us at the moment that might have bought the block of land, let's say 5 years ago. And the same way residential construction costs have gone up, so have civils. So we've even had a couple of people that have come to us to say, we've bought this site and we just cannot make it work. But what they're looking at is actually the land costs. And we reverse engineer it because we know in a certain location, and if I had Carson's, I know what somebody is going to pay for a house on a block of land in that location. So what we do is I'd say, Carson, give me your disclosures, give me your plan of development, give me your design guidelines. I then put that through our team. We would put a house with a facade and a colour scheme on every block of land. We consider the construction costs, you know, like retaining driveways, soil conditions. We allow for that in the package. And then I might say, actually, I know that a house on land is actually worth 1.5 in that location. These packages have come in at 1.4. Mm. I could actually come back to Carson and say, you could actually move your land prices. You could actually increase your land prices by 50 or 60, put that into your FISO, and now tell me whether it works.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of that. Like the amount of market research and the team that you guys would have in place that Shannon and Carson don't have is a benefit to them as well, right? Because, I mean, you want their land. I can see that, right? So you're going to do a shit ton of work in behind the scenes for free, right? To say, hey, this is what it is. This is what we can guarantee you. And Shannon and Carson might not even know that number yet. They might have a number in their mind and it might be less than what you guys are actually willing to pay. And that means on 29 lots, and I don't know what the prices are, right? I'm just going to, you know, throw some numbers out there because I don't even know, right? But call it 500 grand a lot. I'm just going to say, right? So 500 grand a lot, that's a lot of commission that someone's going to save on that 500 grand lot. You're like at 3%, that's $15,000 times X amount of lots and the time and the hassle and the marketing costs, right?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's the marketing costs. Advertising these things aren't free.
Yeah.
And someone's got to take the calls and the rest of it. So the benefit really at times, like you just said, if you came back to them and said, hey, I could get you an extra 50 or 100 grand a lot, I'm happy to pay that because I know what the costs are here because of the feasibility that you guys have done. And on the other end, he might not have to pay 20 to 25 grand per lot in actual selling fees. The benefit to these guys is it's unbelievable. Like it's a real good benefit. And for someone, if they were to sell the land to a mom and pa that then's got to go to another builder and then do that whole process, doesn't mean that they're going to get it cheaper anyways, because you guys are doing this in volume. Like you guys are doing over 500 homes a year. That's 500 roofs. That's 500, you know, driveways, 500 slabs. You guys got buying power, which helps as well.
And not only that, you've got an insatiable appetite for land, because if you've got an engine that's pulling 525 house builds, you can't just run out of land overnight. You'd be screwed.
No.
So you've got to consistently be on the look and the hunt to point. And that's why it's good to hear, refreshing to hear that you guys operate completely different to most builders who are trying to screw the landowner, get a rebate. everything that the horror stories about builders, it sounds like you flipped the script.
Yeah. And I think that's actually why, so Adam Barclay's our CEO. Gallery was established by Adam and Kim Barclay 15 years ago. And I think they wanted to do things differently. I think part of the benefit that we've got with Gallery is we started doing luxury homes. We built them in Sanctuary Cove. It's where our office has stood for the last 15 years. And so I think one of the legacy reasons to work with Gallery is that Adam has basically built homes for his neighbours and friends in Sanctuary Cove. Our office is there. Adam's lived there. He can still happily go to the golf club. He can still eat in the restaurants. And I think there'd be very few builders in Southeast Queensland or potentially in Australia that could actually live where they've worked and still happily sit there for 15 years.
Have that reputation.
And part of it is, you know, Adam, do we always get it right? No. We're humble enough to know that we don't get it right 100% of the time. But when we don't, we're onto it. And one of Adam's mandates is we only build where we can actually get to site. So if there is an issue that gets brought to our attention, it's Adam in the car heading to site. It would be me going to site, or Brett Morris is our head of construction. We're boots on ground kind of people.
So just for that then, again, for the developer out there who's looking to go and essentially build to what, you know, make sure they're not screwing it up with their size of lights, location and whatnot. You guys, you said if you can't get the site, so you're basically Southeast Queensland.
Yep.
And what are you looking for predominantly? So if you could put out the wish list to anyone that's out there looking to go and cut up a block of land, are you looking for 350 metre lots, 500 metre lots? What locations, if you can give a bit of a mix?
I'll take anything right now. And we have demand for every type. So one of the things that we know is going to be a bigger and bigger requirement in Southeast Queensland, and I think this is being mandated by local councils as well as the state government, are for these terrace lots, right? You know, the only way to tackle affordability is really to reduce the land lots. An area of absolute excellence for Gallery is being able to deliver on terrace lots. Now, that could be a lot as small as 270 square metres with a frontage of 7.5 metres.
I developed a shitload of those.
Like, right.
They're tiny.
Yeah, they're tiny. And so you've got to be smart, right? Because you've only got light coming in front and back, and you've got to look at light wells and internal courtyards, and they're hard to construct because you've basically got to construct from the inside out. But part of what is really important with those is that you get a run, that you actually can create a really great streetscape. Yeah. You know, that you're mindful of light, you're mindful of privacy. But these are a really important product that has to come into Southeast Queensland, because how else are we actually going to tackle housing affordability and the housing crisis? And part of it comes down to, if you've got a block and in that area you can actually do 270s or 300 square metre blocks, well, why not do it? And put, you know, one third more homes into that location. It doesn't suit every location, Carson, and I wouldn't be doing it where you are in the Gold Coast. But there is a time and a place for these sorts of things. And I think it's even like Northern Gold Coast, they've got to start looking at this, especially with the infrastructure, with the hospital coming. You know, I get really passionate about people that say, I want 100% owner occupiers in an estate, and it really pisses me off, because I think it's so bloody short-sighted, because you're putting schools, you're putting hospitals, you're putting childcare, you're putting petrol stations. Where the hell do you want the people that are employed in those areas to fucking live if you're only building four-bedroom family homes? I don't think you need to manage, but I think when you actually look at what a unique community looks like, you need to have a housing option for everybody. And that's into that area
now is, you know, people aren't can't afford to buy and live where they're actually working, and that's a massive issue, right? And you look at the amount of people that commute to work every day, right? Like if you're in Brisbane CBD and you're a nurse and you're working at one of the main hospitals, I can guarantee you, you're most likely not living in, you know, one of the 3-bedroom units in Newstead.
Yes.
You know, like you're going to be driving probably half an hour to an hour, or you're living in Yarrabilba and these types of master plan communities. But even those have gone up so much
because
you're still getting a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom house on a, I'm not sure the block size is there, maybe 400 or 500 square meters. And we do need to condense as much as possible. But then you have, you know, the naysayers going, but we got so much land in Australia. And, but that's not where people want to live. People aren't going to go and live 3 hours away and commute to work every day and travel 6 hours. And this is a major, major issue, I think, in the Western world. And I want to unpack a little bit more on that because I think it could get quite steamy, to be honest with you. But what I want to do, because what's unique about this is we actually have a land developer on the panel right now with multiple land lots, right? One that you really, really want. And
I'll take it all, but there's one that I really want.
Right. So I want to know from the land developer's point of view, right? Why haven't you done something like this in the past, right? Like you've done a fair few, and I know that you've been learning over the last handful of years as well and going, okay, and getting better and better on how to sell these things and market demand and these types of things. But what are the pros and cons in your mind from what you know now, if there are any cons on doing something like this?
Well, this has been my thought process, you know. So up to now, a lot of my stuff has been probably more, not, I wouldn't say luxury, but it's, you know, been acreage homes. So typically in this space, it's been the majority of it, from my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, has been more investment stock. So it's been, you know, investment stock in Logan and Ipswich that are going out a lot, especially a lot of the accountants and financial planners, you know, refer to their clients for, you know, negative gearing and all the rest. Whereas a lot of our stuff's been acreage. So typically the you know, project marketers don't really want that stock. So we've been doing a lot of acreage, but now we're probably doing bigger sites. For me, a lot of it is my pre-sale requirements. So now I'm starting to look at it going, okay, can I team up with, you know, someone like Alexandra and Gallery and go, okay, I want to move, you know, half of my, you know, get half debt coverage, because, you know, the reality is, you know, we've got a loan at the moment that's in the 8 figures, and I can get private money for 13%, or I can get bank money for 8-9%. That's a lot of money. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if I can tick that box by going to a builder and saying, hey, can you take out half my lots, and then turn around to an ANZ or CBA or whoever it is and say, hey, can you give me that cheaper rate? So, you know, potentially I can save some money on some interest. And you know, I get those pre-sale requirements to get that cheaper money. So that's what my thought is. But one of the, when Alexandra bailed me up the other day when I was trying to get out the door.
Sounds like she's bailing you up today as well. Yeah.
My question was, my fear has always been that there'll be a poor quality stock. So in the Mojibar site, I'm actually keeping one of the blocks and building my own house. And my fear has always been, if I give it to a project manager, they're going to build the cheapest, nastiest 4x2 that they can. And, you know, I want to live there. I've got some friends that want to live there, and it'll kind of bring the standard down, if you like. So I get it in like some of the more affordable areas like Logan and Ipswich, where you're selling cheaper dirt. It makes more sense in my head, but for the more, say, premium developments, that's where I was like, is it just, you know, development stock? Because I'm like yourself, I rent as well, and I've always and we'll buy it at some point. But so I've got family members at the moment that cannot afford their rent, and they've got their dream job working for, you know, a nurse, and, you know, making more money than they've ever done, but the cost of living's gone up so much, they're just struggling and crying in our lounge room going, I still can't survive on what I've got. It's messed up, you know. So we need that balance. And stuff we've talked about a lot is trying to find some solutions for affordable housing. But putting my developer hat back on, yeah, that was my concern. And then you made the comment about what you said before, is that we can actually design it. You can see what the estate looks like. If you give me half, and you know, I'll show you what that looks like potentially. So that's been my thought process.
You've also got to remember, we're a wholesale builder. We're not an investment builder. So yes, we sell investment products. We build dual dwellings, our co-living homes. We've got over 500 of those on the ground, but we sell more than 50% of our sales into the owner-occupier market. And it's really, I think traditionally, the investment builder and the wholesale builder have almost been used interchangeably. And I would really like to state right here and now, we are a wholesale builder. And so one of the things that we've even done from an investment point of view is we don't consider, even with our investment stock, we don't even consider them investment stock. We do 2,700 ceiling heights. We do stone benches. We, in the kitchen and the bathrooms, we do pendant light fittings, because what we also know, if I'm selling you an investment product, if I was putting you into a home in Logan Reserve and I was telling you you can get 5% rental income on that property, I also want to attract the homemaker out of the rental market, because by pitching the house inclusions higher and designing it, you're a tenant, I'm a tenant, you're still trying to make a home. And, you know, my parents don't understand this whole process. They, you know, owned a home for 40 years and then they downgraded it. And sometimes my dad will say to me, you should sell those properties and get a home for your kids. And I'm like, Dad, my kids have always got a home. Wherever I tell them it is where it is.
Yeah.
But we have, Chris and I, when we first got married 22 years ago, we bought our first property in Sydney, which was a one-bedroom apartment in Darlinghurst, and we could not save to keep up with the Sydney property market. So we've only ever bought what we could afford at any one time. But that's allowed us to live where we want to live and to build wealth through properties.
Yeah.
So I know who I am. You know, there's a whole term for me now, being a rentvestor, but what we're trying to do is appeal to the homemaker out of the rental. It'll give you longevity of the tenant and it'll give you the premium in the rent. But it also means that when that investor goes to on-sell that property in 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to present differently. Unfortunately, I've driven through the same estates that you have, Carson. You can go through estates and it is, you know, dog box after dog box after dog box, and they've put homes in. They haven't considered the streetscape. They haven't considered the neighbourhood fatigue just with regards to house types against house type. But that comes from when you're just selling land.
Yeah.
When there's actually no control over what builder is coming into the estate. And the reality is, if you went and did your land, how are you going to control the build outcome? Like, you could have a mum and dad who comes and buys the biggest block of land that they can afford, and then they actually get to their retail builder and they go, oh, bugger, we've spent our budget on the land. We now have to build a lower quality home. By working with me, I can guarantee you what your house is going to look like. I can guarantee what the inclusions are, what the size is going to be. Like, I can guarantee you what the built outcome of your land estate will look like, because it's predetermined before we even take it to market. If you're just selling land, you're just hoping that the people you've sold to that have got good taste and are working with a reasonable builder.
So just to clarify too, the lots that Gallery are looking for, they're full service, street curb and light, on full services. You're not looking for 3 or 4 acre lots on septic or anything like that. No, you've got a pretty strict criteria.
Yeah, we've got a strict criteria, but we also have a full developments team. So we've also got developers that come to us, you know, mum and dad developers who actually then tap into our development team that can help them through the DA process. We can help introduce them to civil contractors. So Gallery has its own projects. We just finished 45 townhomes in Upper Coomera. We've done land estates at Logan Reserve, Homeview, Deception Bay, so all over Southeast Queensland. So we've got that know-how and that network within our business as well. So we can better support mum and dad or private developers. We're even helping a couple of developers that have developed in New South Wales or developed in Canberra or Victoria, who have secured a land lot in Queensland and don't have the infrastructure on the ground here in Southeast Queensland, and we help them with that as well.
Now, there's also a term used because, again, what you said is very valid, Carson, right? Because there's a bit of there's a number side to this, but in this block of 29, there's an emotional side to it as well, going, I want to build my house there, and I probably promised a few friends, you know, a good deal on a block of land so they can live near me as well. And the last thing I want is someone to come in and build dog boxes. But there's a term called covenants that also protects against some of that, and a lot of people won't know what that means. So can you please explain a little bit around that?
Yeah, so a lot of the land estates in Southeast Queensland have it. Whether they're enforced, who knows? And I think that's probably part of the problem, as I think everybody thinks things are up for negotiation. So obviously there are council requirements with regards to setbacks and site coverage and all the rest, but it would be then the design covenants that hopefully, Carson, you've designed for your estate, which would be talking about restrictions on colour schemes, the number of external finishes that need to be used on a facade, the type of facades that actually can be used, that it needs to have, you know, a 60-degree pitch roof or something like that, so that you can actually put requirements in so that, and these are usually a very long document with imagery so that nobody can get confused what needs to happen. And I suppose what needs to happen is it needs to be part of the contract for the land so that the owner is agreeing to adhere to them. And then it's making it, it's putting in a balance that they have to submit their plans back to somebody that's attached to the land vendor. It's either going to be Carson Direct or it might be your solicitors, who actually gets the full set of construction drawings with the facades to actually make sure that they are being delivered according to the design guidelines, and that there is an approval that is sought from the land vendor prior to getting the building approval or your BA, which is actually the council or the building certifier saying, yes, those plans suit that block of land in this council location, and you're now approved to build it. It's really making sure that the design outcomes and like the actual visual outcome of the estate is going to be protected. Yeah. And it's for everybody's benefit.
It is. Yeah, I agree. You don't want the Minions house beside you, you know, like I don't know if you guys watch that movie, but there's all these houses and they got the Minions house, which is totally different looking house, you know, like,
but you
in
see
the
it
middle of the
here on the Gold Coast,
you
right?
You do see it. You do see it.
Like you drive around and you think, how did that house get approved to be built here?
Yeah, agree.
But so, they go too far the other way as well, though. Like yeah. Covenants can be so, yeah, people are spending $60,000 on their facade in certain, you know, areas on the Gold Coast where it's like $60,000 extra to just fit the covenant requirements. So we're probably a bit too loose with our covenants, but, you know, I think there has to be the right balance, right?
So, yeah.
So what's the process, guys? So obviously land developer, land purchaser. So what's the process now? So if there's someone out there right now that's got a block of 5, a block of 10, a block of 20, a block of 50, whatever it is, and they've never done something like this before, what's the process? You meet at a boat show. Next thing you know, the week, 2 weeks later, you're on a podcast with that person. What's the next thing? Do you go to site? Do you go to their office? What do you show them? How does it actually work for the people that don't know this, and for the people that might want to get into this land development space?
So I would be trying to get Carson to come into our Sanctuary Cove head office.
Yep.
I just need the address of the site. We can pull it up on Archistar, which will give us a fair amount of information with regards to levels, zoning.
I got the address. It just depends how much you want to pay. I got the address.
Yeah, I got it 4%.
Yeah, I'll drive you there after here.
Perfect. Even better. And look, one of the things that we do is
guys, I know this is an ad, but trust me, you want to watch this one because it is an absolutely ripping product for anybody who uses a computer. One of the things I hate the most in business is email and responding to YouTube comments on my computer here. This AI app is a game changer. What it does is it enables me to never type another email again. I'm going to show you how it works, but essentially, instead of typing, I have a key on my computer that I just push the key. I start talking. It dictates everything I said and uses AI to correct any words that it hears after I've trained it a few times where there's misspelling. and it just cuts my email response time in half and enables me to give much deeper, better emails to people. Just check this out. As soon as you see it, you'll see how it works. If you want to get it, there's a link beneath this video. It is insane. It's called Whisper AI. It's a game changer. Let me show you. So this is a scene you've all seen before, writing an email, but instead of going and writing and using my keys here to type in, I'm just going to push that little FN button and I'm going to read this straight in here. So watch this. Hi there. Thanks for watching the podcast. Have a great day. Let it go. Boom. There it is. And I hit send. That's it, guys. Click on the link below the video. Get signed up today. It will save you heaps of time. All my entrepreneurial friends are using it. You can thank me later. Let's get back to the pod.
The acquisition team and myself, we get in the car and we actually drive to the site.
Yeah.
So we would actually go have a look around. We want to see how many trees are going to stay, how many trees are going to have to go, what does the neighborhood actually already look like, what else is being pulled down, what are the new homes looking like that are already going into the area. We don't want Carson's estate to stand out like a sore thumb. We actually want it to be an extension of the community that's already established, especially in an area. Am I allowed to say where it is?
Yeah.
Mudrabar. I mean, that's highly sought after. And I can help you design your home and your friends' homes, no problems. And so they, you know, I'll look after them so that they'll get the outcome that they want. We would then look at what the lots are. You've already got a DA on this project, right?
We just lodged it.
Oh, just lodged it. Yeah. Okay. And then we can assist through any of the other sort of services that you might need with regards to helping you with the program. We would look at what your feasibility looks like, whether we can actually improve the outcome of the feasibility by actually looking at what the built component is going to look like. Because the land itself, you can make it whatever you want it to be. But the value that the client is going to see is how much is it going to cost me to have my home on that block of land. And there's already a value attached to that, and there's already market demand that's telling us what that value is. And so we just try and make sure that you are meeting it. I mean, we're also working with developers where we are currently delivering them unconditional contracts and we're setting new price growth in those locations. You know, the market's growing and we understand that. You want to take advantage of the current market conditions. Land supply is critical in Southeast Queensland. So you don't want to give it away for free.
Yeah. Are most developers, if you were to, you know, go through all the developers that you've got, are the majority of them just using you for a portion of their sales? How many would be using, you know, are you taking out the whole estate? What would you say the balance is roughly across the board?
I like it when I get the whole estate.
And what's the capacity? We talk like a 400 lot estate. I mean, what's your capacity?
Yep. So we've got an estate coming up, which is in the Western Corridor, which will be 400 lots. It'll be staged. It'll be over 8 stages. So then we'll probably only ever have 40 to 50 at a time. And we'll tackle it the same way. It's master planned at every stage. And then we do a gradual release. We get our clients to sign unconditional contracts. We can do up to 10% land deposits. It really depends on what is needed by the vendor. It's easier when it's only 5%, but we understand that with some of the funders for the land, they want unconditional contracts with 10%.
Yeah.
We prefer to be working with a DA-approved site because clients want the certainty that they're actually going to get the house. And I think, again, that's just a lag from COVID, right, that people saw too many things that never came to fruition. And they just don't want to take that risk. So we would prefer DA. We also understand that some people's funders, they require unconditional contracts before they can get their OpWorks approval in place because they're going to need funding for it. So we can sell from DA. But, you know, our preference is always to have dirt being moved around because, again, it just gives confidence to the purchasers this is actually going to happen. And even if this is an investment, every one of our clients are emotionally attached to the property. You know, even for a client who's an investor and might be working with a financial planner, and the financial planner might be saying to them, don't get attached. This is just the vehicle that you're using to create wealth. It's impossible. This is a huge amount of money. You know, we're slowly crawling towards a medium house price of $1 million in Southeast Queensland. That's a lot of money. People are going to be emotionally attached to it. And so people want to make sure that they're investing with a builder where the house is going to look good. And, you know, even with my husband, when we're investing, he's always got this mindset of, if something went wrong, could we live in this property? Like, if we had to, could we live in that property? So as much as I can talk to him about the outcome, the upside, the growth, you know, what our retirement could look like, he is always emotionally attached to the property. And so I just think it's try not to fight against it, bring it in and use it to your advantage.
So that's the land side from the developer's perspective. Are you, does Gallery always on the lookout for resellers or referral partners?
Always.
So what's that look like? How does that work for a referral partner? If there's a person out there is a financial planner, has a database, or is a project marketer, what's that look like with Gallery and how does it work?
So we have a pretty strict onboarding process. We don't like to work. We want to work with people who have a true partnership with their clients. So the referral partners that we work with are not doing Facebook ads. Their business is based on referrals. And it's because they've got a reputation then that makes sense to align with our own. We want to be working with referral partners that have got the knowledge and the capacity to take somebody through with confidence. You know, how I got into this industry in the first place was I'm an art dealer by trade. I have a degree in art history and theory. I had no property experience. And then I got my CV got delivered to a recruiter who was recruiting at the time for Sunland Group. And I worked for Sunland, started as their client relations manager in their Sydney office. And I was working on a project that we had that was out near Penrith. And I was the client relations manager. So I'd be setting up for like the property launches and I was listening to how agents, spruikers, were selling Sunland's project at that time. And I remember Saba having a conversation with me a few weeks later and I said, it's so sad that these agents lie about our project to actually get a sale done. And I said, it shouldn't have to be that way. The project is excellent. Like if they actually just took the time to know the details of the project and the location, there's no need to lie. The project would sell itself. And Saba said, well, if you think you can do it better, do it. And so I'm a talker, as you can tell. So for me, if I'm thinking it, it's usually falling out of my mouth. So I want referral partners the same. I do not need somebody that is manipulating or selling to a client. I want somebody who is really invested in getting the right outcome for their client. And you know, I have 1,000 examples of bad referral partners. You know, I had one referral partner that bought in one of our estates at Logan Reserve. It was a first-time investor and this guy was really emotionally attached to the property. And he was talking to our property management team and he was really obsessed with getting a discount on his management fee. And we don't discount our management fees. It's, you know, it's like anybody, if you're good at what you do, you shouldn't have to discount.
Yeah. And unless it's cars and friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And and then, you know, I'll look after them. Yeah. And he's going to give me all 29, so it'll be worth it.
So I said that earlier. I want full estates.
I want the full estate. But, you know, this guy ended up getting put to a property manager where they discounted their rental income, but they achieved $200 less in the rental income than we did for the property next door. And I just had to say to the referral partner, because you did not educate your client is now not going to be in a position to reinvest because they will have to cancel that Form 6 with that property management group at the end of the term. They'll have vacancy. Like it's having the responsibility to take a client from A to Z. It is actually making sure that they're working with the best possible broker who can actually take them through the options. You know, when somebody says to me, oh, I can only get lending with CBA, I'm like, well, you're not working with a decent broker. That's probably the only person that they work with. Mm-hmm. You actually need to be working with somebody who can actually sit down and take the time. So I want to know who they are. I want to know who their clients are. I want to know who their brokers are, I want to know who their solicitors are and make sure that they're actually getting an outcome because I can guarantee you the client will forget about whatever it was with the referral partner. They will never forget what Gallery did. We're the last man standing. It's always my fault. So I have to protect us. I have to make sure that if you're selling for Gallery, that you know us. You know why you would be recommending a client to Gallery.
Can you offer any advice to a mum, dad investor out there? Because it's a bit of a minefield, right? Like you said, you got your Facebook friends on there pitching deals, getting massive commissions to sell overinflated commissions. So if you are buying a house and land package, what should mum and dad be looking for or looking out for so they don't get ripped? Or where's a good, what would you see as a good deal, or, you know, something that a gallery puts together? What should we be looking for? Because not everyone wants to be a developer, right? So put on the other hat. What should mum and dad be doing and looking out for?
So I think you've got to have, I think when a mum and dad is looking to do an investment, you should have done your own due diligence. But I also think you have to educate yourself by going and looking at what a number of referral partners might be doing. So, like, don't just go to one property seminar, go to a couple. And, you know, when I bought my first property, I absolutely got sold. I actually worked with a broker that told me the best way for me to avoid LMI was to take out a personal loan to increase my deposit. But we're talking about a property investment 22 years ago. So the personal loan interest rate was 14%, while my mortgage rate was 9.65%. I was far better off taking the LMI than having a personal loan. But I did not know enough. And they'd also told me what my weekly cost of holding that investment was going to be, but I didn't realize that it was the after-tax position. I actually didn't realize I needed to pay the mortgage on a monthly basis. I was 25. I had no idea. And it was because I went to one seminar and I allowed myself to be like pushed through a sausage factory, really, that this was like, you've come here, now do this, now do this, now do this. And they knew more than I did. I did MIS at school. You know, I had an art degree. Like, if it was pretty, I knew about it. Yeah. But
talk to me about Van Gogh.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I could tell you why he's famous, and it had nothing to do with him. It was his sister-in-law. But I also learned at maths at school. I learned how to balance a checkbook, and we don't even have checkbooks now. So I'm completely outside of my comfort zone. So go and do the research. Go and speak to a number of people. I think it's also really important to work with people that you like and that you trust, because you have to work with somebody who actually has done it more than you. You know, don't come in with this is what I want and not be prepared to benefit from their experience and their professionalism.
I think one of the things is people always want to point the finger at someone.
Yes.
It's like, make sure if it doesn't go right, you blame yourself, not someone else. And that's the amount of due diligence that you need to do yourself. Don't be lazy, right? If you're buying something and you're getting spruced something somewhere and it's in, you know, Roma or Rockhampton or wherever it is, drive there, go there, talk to the locals. You know, sit down at a cafe, see who's living there, these types of things. Do your due diligence, right? Go on realestate.com, you know, go on RP data, see what recent sales have had. Talk to other builders, get their opinions. This is what I feel that people aren't doing enough.
Yeah.
We're lazy, right? We're becoming lazy. We're becoming complacent. And all we're doing is trusting someone else that knows more than us. Well, let me tell you, if you get involved with the wrong person, that's a good salesperson, they will sell ice to Eskimos, right?
Yeah.
That is the reality. And unfortunately, some of them don't have your back.
Yeah. Correct. Right?
And this is the industry that we're in, which makes things difficult for people like you.
Yeah.
Right? And what you guys are doing, because for every one good one, there's going to be 10 other ones doing the wrong thing. But at the end of the day, do your due diligence, research, look at reviews, talk to clients that have used them before. Like, at the end of the day, you're not building 500 houses because your last 500 were shit.
Yes.
Right? You're building 500 because your last 350 were good. And guess what? Next year, you're going to be doing 650, another 650 good ones. And this is the thing, right? People just need to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I've worked in multiple different sectors. One's in the finance sector, and we're completely sanctioned under the ASIC regulation, right? But with property, a medium price property, and there's $1 million, any cowboy can go out there and fucking sell and flog $1 million property with overinflated comms involved, a whole shooting match. So you got to, it is, when you say in this game, it is a game filled with sharks.
Yeah.
You can look at our QBCC license, and that's what, you know, a lot of people should do.
I was probably referring to you. I'm saying you're marketers and people selling these investment house and land packages is be careful who you're dealing with, because it's a fucking shark fest out there.
Correct. So, and if they are recommending a builder, go onto the QBCC, look them up, actually see their license history. see whether they've had infringements, see whether or not they've had issues with their performance in the past. It is a government body.
And it's free.
And it's free. And it takes you 2 seconds. You can go into QBCC right now. You can look up gallery homes. It's going to show you the exact number of homes that we've built financial year to date, what we did last year. It's going to show how long we've held our license and whether we've had any infringements. And gallery has zero. We have a very clean record because we don't ever allow for something to get to that point. We're on the front foot.
Yeah, just to double down on that, you're right. There's amazing financial planners out there that have their clients' best interests at heart. But yeah, just a word of warning as well. There's a lot of financial planners that are just looking for that juicy comms. And I've had family members and friends that have had, been completely cooked because we sit here and say, this is not financial advice. But if you're a financial planner, you can give financial advice and legally lose your money.
Yeah.
Right. So we say that all the time. But so yeah, you're right. You need to do your homework. And I say this, even with people looking to do joint ventures, you can't just say to someone, if someone's pitching you a deal, you can't just take their numbers for it. You have to do your own work. You need to be responsible for your own outcome. Yes, take their advice and see if they've got the runs on the board. Okay, you're going to get me 10 properties. Have you got 10 properties? Or can you show me what your clients have got that 10 properties? You can't just have the nice glossy magazine and go, oh, that looks great. Okay, you factored in 30%. Deposit and then the depreciation, and now it's kind of mutually geared.
I mean, yeah. Another thing out there, I'm not hopefully shooting in your nest too much there, but for the buyer out there with these project marketers, they're usually getting at some companies $30,000-$40,000 a piece to go and sell the property. Is if you really want to do, you go and get a mortgage purposes valuation on the block next door and you'll work out what the thing's worth because that's how valuable. That's what they'll be going to write in your loan at. So if it's 500 grand and it comes in at 430, well, more for you. You're stuck in at 500 grand. So you're 70 grand out of pocket to make up that difference when a valuer comes in at 430 grand, as an example. And that comes down to your due diligence is going, well, here's our properties. How do they fail?
Where does that summer come from?
Valuers are like a whole nother podcast.
You'd be battling. I was receiving into the assholes as well.
Yeah, because we can have valuations done by four of the bigger ones, and the difference between one that comes in on the dollar or close to the contract price, we could have the same house couple of doors up and it'd be 100K off. We've also had a valuer arrive into an land estate of ours on the north side in Moreton Bay, and the guy worked for one of the big ones, and he arrived there and he was just going, I grew up here and I think this suburb is a shithole. And there's no way this is coming in close. And I was just like, mate, I get that it's your personal opinion, but it is meant to be supported by sales history. And unfortunately, I think valuers are part of the problem.
They can be as well. And what we used to do, just to comfort our clients, is we used to go and get three valuations from three different and go, here they are.
Yeah.
And this is where we're at. And there is going to be a bit of flex in it. Because otherwise, we've had people come to us in the past going, well, they got stuck for like 100 grand out and they're screwed.
Yeah.
Because the markers have pushed it that far over the valve. And they went in blind and signed.
Yeah.
So they're the blood stories.
They are.
Before you guys put on the punching gloves, I can see this going down that rabbit hole really quickly. No, I'm joking. I want to talk a little bit now, just because we've been going for almost an hour now, and I want to... conscious of time, a little bit on the housing crisis and your opinion of causes, effects, solutions. From your perspective on the ground, because this is what you're doing every single day, what do you believe are the real drivers behind the current housing crisis in Australia?
Well, it's just really come down to supply. And so that comes down to state government and the local governments. We haven't been building enough homes, not for last year or the year, for decades. And so what we're looking at is we've had, especially here in Southeast Queensland, we've still got international migration. We've got huge numbers of interstate migration, but we haven't been delivering homes. But I'm sure, Carson, you've probably got something to speak to. Even part of it is, even if you got the DA, you're going to be compelled to work with certain companies with regard to the water connections, right, or the power connections. And look, we've got a land estate that is settling. We've done about 29 sales in this land estate. Titles are in 2 weeks' time. The developer has fully bonded the works at the back end. There will be no water on in this estate for at least 6 weeks. And we can still get on site and start the housing construction, and we'll have to cart in water for that. But there won't be power for 3 to 4 months because the power has to come through another estate, and they've got a tunnel bore from one estate to the next. And that is currently with council requiring a DA approval. But the land vendor has still got clients settling on it. And we build traditional single-story homes in 18 weeks. And so from our point of view, we're kind of mindful that we could actually end up having close to 29 completed homes that won't have power, which means we can't get a Form 21, which means people can't, you know, move into the homes. And that's not a unique story. There've been stories in the papers here for years. You know, you can go to Moreton Bay and it's Unity Water. It's a variety of things. And I think it's just this between the private developers and the government-owned infrastructure and the timing of that and the support of those infrastructure companies to be able to deliver, I think there is a complete and utter mismatch. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I also then think even getting your DA lodged, you know, getting a pre-approval meeting to actually review what it is that you'd like to do on a block of land takes time with council, then there's feedback. It's even that approval process is longer than it probably needs to be, because when you drive around, there's some shitty developments that have been delivered. How did that happen? And now they're scrutinising other things. Mm. And then I just think the other part of it is that we're not actually thinking about what the communities need to look like. How do we actually carve up these suburbs to actually put more houses into locations? You know, I don't agree with necessarily what they're doing in Sydney, where they're, you know, coming up along the Pacific Highway and increasing the density and the ceiling heights, and you're going to lose some absolute character homes that have actually are meaningful to those suburbs. I don't think we should be decimating suburbs across southeast Queensland, but there has to be a commercial reality. You know, people housing affordability, this is not a new conversation. Like, I think this conversation is, you know, was certainly around 20 years ago. It was probably around 30 years ago. We're just not building enough homes of the right type in the right locations to actually allow people to build their lives. And, you know, I think about it even when my parents built their home, my mum stayed at home. So, you know, my dad could do the commute to work because mum was there to get us to and from school. But you're now talking about more dual income families. Well, that requires work, home and childcare to be as close together to actually get it done. So I think there's a whole heap there and I don't have answers to it. I should really go into politics, I think, so that I can actually make a difference. But I think that's part of it. It is there's the developer and then there's the actual infrastructure, and I do not think there's enough collaboration between the two.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned supply and demand. For me, that's what it all comes down to. So, you know, if you had a magic wand and you could, you know, what would you be doing in some of these areas? Would you just be rezoning swaths of land that can be developed, or would you be trying to densify what we've already got in the right areas? Which, because, you know, council look at it and go, well, the state gold counts, for example, they want to go up. But the problem is cost of construction is so high, it only works on the waterfront and the premium suburbs. Because a lot of developers, the feasibilities just aren't stacking up. So they want to swap from, you know, 70% of detached housing over to 70% high rise, and it's just not stacking up. So, but you got areas, we're kind of landlocked on the Gold Coast, but you go up to Logan and Moreton and Ipswich and these suburbs, they're probably got the most amount of land, but it's still, there's a lack of certainty, I suppose, in the timeframes. You know, over the borders, even worse, we took 2.5 years to get a DA approval through. Our friends next door have just taken 18 months to get their construction certificate approved. So you're 4 years in, all your holding costs, that's just adding to the bottom line of the margin that we need to then on sell it as well. Because as much as developers are the bad guys, whether you're selling hats or you're selling dirt, you need a certain amount of margin, and we need at least a 20% margin or you go and get the funding from the banks.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the the solution there around the supply? How do we get more supply to the market if you've got the magic wand and you can do what you like?
It would be rezoning, but then it's a matter of how do you get the sewer, the water and the electricity into those estates. We know that the local councils, especially here on Southeast Queensland, they're already financially stretched to deliver that infrastructure, and then you're having to rely on the private developer to bring it in as part of their feasibility and then dedicate it back to council, and there's, you know, offset of council contributions. But again, that's then a huge financial burden on the developer to be able to do that and deliver it as part of it. It's a complicated one. I mean, even with one of our projects, you know, we had to bring in council infrastructure, and it was a burden of almost $2 million onto the FISO. We had to pay for it up front, and then council would pay it back after we'd delivered and had been certified. But that's a lot for a developer, especially when you're borrowing the money and you're paying interest on that, and then there's weather delays and other things. We've probably got to get better at trying to work out how those infrastructure costs can be offset at some of the upfront council contributions so that it actually frees up the cash flow for the developers, because we know cash flow is king. And I think if that was made easier, you could probably get more developers doing more, and that we'd see less developers and less builders going under.
I feel, you know, there's a part of me that feels like it's restricted on purpose. You know, like, as if you just go and rezone everything and build what's actually required, I feel like we're not going to have the infrastructure that's needed, right? Yeah. Like, you look at places like Bali as an example, which is very different than Gold Coast specifically, or Southeast Queensland, but there's no rules, you know, like the amount of building that's going on there is astronomical, but there's no infrastructure. And then you have traffic, and like, there's no need of, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday that lives there, and she's like, you don't need it. No one buys cars here because you will not be able to get around. There's enough traffic just riding around in a scooter. And I feel it's a similar type of thing here, right? Because at the same time, what we got to remember, there's demand, right? But it's basic supply and demand, right? That's economics, basic supply and demand. But if you up the supply too much, it can affect the demand.
Mm.
And in my opinion, I think it was Lego. I think it's Lego. I have to look it up. But they never build. They always build less, a little bit less than the actual demand, to always keep it in demand, right? So, and I feel like there's a level of that as well in Australian real estate. Because if you go and you build too much, it'll affect the demand, in my opinion. So you don't want to build over the demand, because Australian real estate, so much wealth is held in Australian real estate compared to a lot of other countries. And they got to make sure that that's stable, you know. That's my opinion, or my conspiracy theory. Maybe, but.
it's not like a diamond sector that go on.
Yeah, you know, like it's yeah. Because if they just doesn't even matter if they went to go and zone different things. We don't have the, never mind the infrastructure, but we don't have the people to actually do it. I feel that way. You know, I don't think we have the qualified. Like, I'm building at the moment. We develop. You've seen the prices. You know what you're paying for trades.
Yeah,
it is unbelievable. Like, I've calculated some trades on a build at the moment, and what they're actually making on some of this stuff. And I'm just going, like, you don't need to be doing much else.
No, I think it's, Australia has an obsession with home ownership, and you know, I've got friends that have come from other places in the world, and they say this is not, like, home ownership is not a national sport where they're from.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, France, Italy,
yep.
Home ownership is not a huge part of their lifestyle. You know, they've got generations of families that are renters.
Yep.
For us, it is about home ownership, but maybe that needs to change too, as, you know, to tackle the affordability. Maybe I'm not suggesting capping rental incomes, because I have a portfolio of properties that I rely on to be rented for as much as they can in the market, but maybe there has to be some other way to to help. You know, there's the buy to rent and all of those schemes, but they don't seem to be making any meaningful contribution to freeing up housing stock.
And you know, we had a podcast earlier and we were talking about, you know, people are moving here for lifestyle and that's great. And the people that can afford to move here for lifestyle is amazing. But when that person breaks their leg and has to go to the hospital, there needs to be someone there to help them.
Yes.
And that person is not going to be traveling 3 hours to get here. And that is the issue, right?
Yeah.
The issue is having those people that, you know, are going to help you in those situations. They need to be able to afford where they're working.
Correct.
And the issue is they're starting to move out more and more and more and more. And it doesn't matter that we're attracting wealth and we're attracting the Ferraris and the Lamborghinis and the fancy restaurants and all these people, because those people aren't the ones that are going to be doing those jobs.
Yeah.
And we need to respect those people and make sure they have a fair go on where they can live in, like you said earlier, right? You want to, the daycare, the school, they all need to be within reason of where you actually live, or else you're going to be making different decisions. And that's the exact same thing with these people that are being pushed out of the market. Not only are they being pushed out of the market from a buying perspective, they're being pushed out of the market from a rental perspective. They can't even afford to live, never mind renting or owning, we're in their own backyard where they're working. And to me, that's one of the biggest issues that we're having.
Yeah. And look, we develop a co-living home. I know you guys have had Kevin Dooney on the show before, and he's talked about his rooming accommodation. We do a co-living home, which is a 1A residential build. We've got over 500 of them on the ground. But who's going into those homes? These are not people that are social recipients. They're not on government subsidies. These people earn $75,000 a year. You know, they're school teachers, assistants, you know, medical, receptionists.
All very important people.
All very important people. My barista, the guy at the petrol station, the person stacking Woolworths. These people, we have a waiting list for these people to come into these homes in locations near where they work. And, you know, a lot of people, when they first hear about co-living, they're like, oh, well, who are they and what are they? I'm like, they're 30. They're 30. They're single. They earn $75,000 a year, and they're trying to find secure, safe, and affordable housing near where they work. And in some of the suburbs, you know, like we did a co-living home out at Ripley, and we had probably in excess of 25 applicants. We only had one home, and we gave it to three girls, and they were all working within Ripley Town Centre. So we had someone from Woolworths, a childcare, and either a hairdresser or a nail artist. And when you drove into Ripley Town Centre, if you parked your car in the middle, you could actually see their three places of employment. And they were thrilled to be able to go into one of these homes where their commute went from 45 minutes down to 10 minutes. You know, you're saving petrol, you're saving time, you actually improve your whole life. But it's hard to actually get enough of these homes in the locations that they need to be.
Agreed.
Just shifting gears quickly before we wrap up, with the with your whole business model, obviously you do your own projects, and then you've got
your project.
And my project, potentially. Well, it sounds like it's already done. Deal over here with these boys.
That potentially hurt. It really hurt.
That's a get out of jail clause, I think. Isn't it?
So we've got to have an asterisk there somewhere.
Yeah. I got a business partner I got to talk to.
Joint ventures. Do you do any joint ventures with developers, or let's say, you know, someone's at home that they've either sitting on this piece of dirt already that the parents have owned for 20 years, and they can just sell it to a developer, or they could come to someone like you and do a joint venture, or actually a developer themselves that's like, actually, we're in trouble here, or, you know, can you help us out? Have any of those marriages happened? And
yes, what to all like? Of them.
Yep.
Yep. So, and you know, when people say, well, what's the way it works? It's kind of like, have a conversation with us and we will see whether we can add value. So, and that's where it starts. We have this sort of internal conversation between our leadership team is that our starting position is yes. So when Adam, who's our CEO, is a massive believer in reciprocity, And he thinks that if we can't help, we might know somebody that can help. So come to us and have a conversation first. If it's not for us, we will certainly make introductions if we think there's a better fit somewhere else. And there's not one way to kind of cut it up. So we're happy to kind of understand, if we can understand what your concerns are, or what your major drivers are, or what your outcome is that you're looking, we will then try and work backwards from there to see how we can assist or put you on a track to somebody else that can. But our starting position is always yes.
And your second position is you'll just refer them over to me if they come to you.
and
then I'll sell the blocks back.
Yeah. Well, as long as, we will definitely work something out, Carson, because we're going to be neighbors.
I got one last question. So we got a lot of different types of listeners, right? And some of them will be land developers. Some are learning to become land developers. So if you're speaking to them right now, like you are in front of the camera, what are you looking for? What are you looking for from them right now? If someone's sitting on 10 lots, on 20 lots, on 30 lots, what's the locations? And
from the border.
Yep.
All the way through to the Sunshine Coast.
Yep. So from New South Wales border to Sunshine Coast.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we'll go out not as far as Toowoomba, but we'll certainly go out as far as Rosewood, Gatton. We've done a lot around Ipswich, Lowood, Laidley, all into those areas.
What's the minimum amount of lots?
There isn't. The way Gallery can deliver on its 18-week build guarantee is that all of our site supervisors have only ever got 15 projects at a time.
Yeah.
So what we look at is what we've already got committed in an area, and if we need to then bring on more site supervisors.
Yep.
But we would look at something because, if you've got 3 lots right now, with the amount of demand and income inquiry from our referral partners, I would take even 1 lot. But if you had 15, that is a dedicated project and a site supervisor.
Single homes, duplexes, townhouses.
Yes, types? Yes, yes. Co-living, dual dwellings, rooming accommodation.
Yep.
Triplex.
Okay.
We've got a housing, terrace homes. We have the experience and the repertoire of plans to be able to service almost every type of land lot in Southeast Queensland.
And what's the best way of getting a hold of you guys or yourself? Or is there an email? Is there a website? Is there an Instagram? What's the best way of?
Well, Gallery Group, we're on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram. We've got a great website. You can ring our office at Sanctuary Cove. You can email me. My email's just asr@gallerygroup.com.au. More than happy for anybody to drop me a line, and I will connect you with the appropriate person within our team, which could be Adam, a member of my acquisition team, could be a construction member of our team. We've got the experience and the know-how in-house, so we'd be able to come up with a solution.
Awesome. Carson, James, as usual, thank you very much. Alexandra, this has been an awesome interview. I wish you the best at dealing with Shannon and Carson and trying to do this deal. I know that they have a lot of other ones in the pipeline, and hopefully something comes to fruition on this one. If you need a hand, don't call me. Call James. He's probably a better negotiator.
Just go up to 5%.
I feel confident that I've got this in the bag.
There you go. Wish you all the luck.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. Again, we keep bringing on interesting guests. This was something totally different. And I'm sure a lot of you guys didn't even know that you can do this. I think it's an efficient way, especially for the amount of demand that is out there at the moment. And you heard it from Alexandra's mouth. Gallery is here. They want to do deals. They want land. And they will help you develop the land at the same time. So don't forget to reach out. That's asr@gallerygroup.com.au, or go to Gallery Homes on their website. Check it out. And drop some comments. Let us know what you liked. Let us know what you disliked, what we could be doing better. Share, subscribe, comment, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.